USA Radio News.
President Trump's campaign organization today filed arbitration against friend-turned-enemy Omarosa Manigault, claiming that she broke a 2016 non-disclosure agreement by disparaging the president in her new book. Today, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says Omarosa never expressed any concern about the president or what the president said while working at the White House.
She worked here for a year and didn't have any of these things to say. In fact, everything she said was quite the opposite, and not just the year that she worked here, but the time that she spent on the campaign trail. And I think it's really sad what she's doing at this point.
Attorneys today for Paul Manafort rested their case without presenting any evidence or witnesses to combat the prosecutor's accusations that the one-time Trump campaign manager committed bank and tax fraud. A new study came out and said e-cigarettes may be more harmful to your health than previously thought. This is USA Radio News.
Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
We work hard at being healthier. And what we really need is better quality sleep. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed intelligently senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides. This is not a bed. It's proven quality sleep. It's the biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the new Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing only for a limited time. To find your local Sleep Number store, go to sleepnumber.com. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
A terror investigation is underway after an attack near the British Parliament. A man in his 20s was arrested, and we're hearing he is not cooperating with the police. Michael Balboni is a former New York Homeland Security advisor. He says it seems more and more like ISIS is going towards these sorts of attacks.
The attacks are continuing, but they are decreasing in their level of sophistication.
All four West Virginia State Senate Supreme Court judges are being impeached. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more on the story.
They're being impeached amid charges of abusing their authority. It's alleged the judges failed to control expenses and went as far as to give the green light to over $1 million in renovations for their individual offices. The state's House of Delegates voting to impeach all four of them late Monday night. They now face an impeachment trial before the state Senate in order to be formally removed. Republican Governor Jim Justice will appoint new justices to replace those who are officially impeached.
This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
In the aftermath of his firing, former FBI agent Peter Strzok is claiming his forced departure from the agency is purely political, and his lawyer argues the termination came as a surprise. House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy says this shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone, including Strzok.
Peter Strzok didn't need any help at all demonizing himself. He had that fully covered. This is exactly what they said about Andy McCabe. Remember, some of my Democrat colleagues were going to hire Andy McCabe so he could finish out his time at the Bureau. I don't know if you remember that. I can't forget it. Peter Strzok, of course, his lawyer says that it was a railroad job. His only other option is to say, you know what? My client prejudged two major investigations. He made up his mind that Hillary Clinton was innocent before he interviewed her. He made up his mind that Donald Trump should be impeached before he bothered to interview him. And oh, by the way, he did a lot of this on the government phone, and he violated other FBI policy.
One of the ways we are also fighting the opioid epidemic is by stopping shipments of drugs coming in from overseas. Now, earlier this summer, the House of Representatives approves a measure to overhaul the international mailing system. Ryan Spradden is an agent with HSI. He explains just how big of a deal it is shipping drugs via the USPS.
We've seen a lot of activity with, you know, criminal organizations, transnational in scope, that, again, they recognize that they can make a lot of money with opioids, with fentanyl.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon.
Hello, it's Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters. We're going to be started in about 2 minutes. First things first, they've asked me to give you the weather and intro, so I'm going to do that first.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Hey, so today is the 14th of August. It's just a little after 4 o'clock. The sun is out, but give it about 5 seconds, it'll be raining again. I drove from exit 15 in Clinton on 78 over to exit 36, Warren, Watchung area, and I must have turned the wipers on and off 20 times yesterday. I mean, it just kept changing and changing and changing, and that's what's been going on, sort of hot and humid. It's a New Jersey summer weather forecast. We're supposed to have weather in the high 80s, low 90s for the next few days, with a little bit of thunder boomer interrupting things as we go along. I'm going to play my introduction and we'll get started.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, it's Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters. And I'm broadcasting today from scenic downtown Flemington. It's hot and humid, as I just said, and the real estate market is really sort of rumbling along. We typically have a slowdown around July 4th weekend, and then it becomes too late to buy a house and get the kids in school. This year it didn't slow down. It just kept going, and we're listing houses, which is good news because we have such a shortage of houses that now that we're starting to list them again, I can see that eventually it could break this logjam up. I've had 3 or 4 people call me that have done business with me in the past and have decided to list, and in 3 of the 4 cases, they're going to leave the state for various reasons. But most likely, the most voiced reason is it's expensive to live here, and it is. It's a great place to live. New Jersey's a great state to live in, but it's also an expensive state to live in. And Hunterdon County ranks right up there. It's a little too far to commute to New York. So you've got to find a way to earn a living without commuting to New York every day, maybe a couple of days a week max. And it also is a great place to live, but an expensive place to live. It is the number one or number two, depending on the month you look at it, income state, income county in the country. It's usually Hunterdon is number one and Somerset's number two, and then the next month they change places. But great place to live, just an expensive place to live. So I thought we would dedicate this week to millennials. It's almost become a dirty word, and I don't mean for it to be that because it's our future. And the millennials are our first-time buyers. So I'm going to define what a millennial is, and then I'm going to talk about some of the issues facing them when they go out to buy a home in the market that we're in today. Some of those are market-related, and some of those are self-inflicted. Some of those are a result of a lot of years in school and a weak economy and a lot of student loans. So let me define a millennial, numbering just over 75 million people, roughly one quarter of our population in the country. Today's 21 to 37-year-olds are millennials. They're the largest generation in U.S. history. They're tech-savvy. They're more racially and ethnically diverse and more educated. And many have children later in life, much later than the previous generations. We're actually looking at getting married and having children to be in the mid to late 30s at this point, where it used to be the late 20s. So when I was a kid and we got married and had kids, it was early 20s. So it's changing a lot, and that's changing what the demand is on housing. Although most millennials now have entered peak household formation and home buying years, they're becoming homeowners later and at lower rates. One new extensive millennial homeownership report says the homeownership rate of millennials between 25 and 34 was 37% in 2015, approximately 8% lower than a homeownership rate of Gen Xers and baby boomers at that same age. So less of them are buying houses. We're going to get into why. If the homeownership rate for millennials had stayed the same as previous generations, there would be about 3.4 million more homeowners today. That's an amazing statistic. So they're not buying. Let's look at the generations defined. Millennials were born between 81 and 97. Today they're between 18 and 34. Gen Xs were born in 65 to 80, and today they're between 35 and 50. And then the baby boomers were born between 46 and 64, and today they're 51 to 69. As a matter of fact, the older baby boomers are starting to retire. So one report looks at demographics, lifestyle choices, external barriers to home ownership to determine which factors have been the greatest influence on millennials' home buying decisions. We quantify for the first time the influence on millennials: lower marriage rates, greater racial diversity, increased educational debt, big point there, and attitudes towards home ownership. Delayed marriage had the most significant impact on millennial home ownership. Being married increased the probability of owning a home about 18 percentage points after accounting for other factors such as age, income, race, ethnicity, and education. Ethnicity, I guess it's pronounced. The marriage rate amongst young adults dropped from 52% in 1990 to 39% in 2015. 52% in 1990 to 39% in 2015. The marriage rate in 2015 has been the same as it was, if it was the same as it was in 1990, the millennial home ownership rate would be about 5 percentage points higher. These are amazing numbers. Increased racial diversity played a significant role. Because the non-Hispanic white households have higher home ownership rates than other racial groups, millennials' increasing diversity contributed to their lower home ownership rate. Between 1990 and 2015, the share of white households dropped 16 percentage points from 76 to 60%. During that period, Hispanics' share increased 9 percentage points, Asians increased 3 percentage points, and Black share increased 2 percentage points. At the same time, the home ownership rate of almost all groups except Hispanics dropped, with the greatest decline observed amongst the Black and white households, dropping 6 and 5% respectively. The racial composition in 2015 had been the same as it was in 1990. The millennial home ownership rate would be nearly 3 percentage point higher. So let me just explain to you in maybe terms that would set the racial diversity difference that we're seeing. I heard the president of Raritan Valley Community College speak at an education forum in June over at Duke Farms, and he said for the first time in its existence, RVCC has now more than 50% non-white student body. more than 50%. Nothing wrong with it, nothing right with it is, that's what it is. We have a very racially diverse. And the levels of education debt are higher. Our study found that 1% increase in education loan debt decreases the likelihood of buying a home by 0.15 percentage points. In other words, if a person's household student debt increases 100% from $50,000 to $100,000, with all other things holding the same, the likelihood of owning a home will decrease 15 percentage points. So there's a lot of student debt, and it's stopping these people from owning a home in a lot of instances. Many millennials choose to live on high-cost city centers. Between 2005 and 2015, many millennials moved into city centers with greater urban amenities and job opportunities, where the homes are in high demand and expensive. The shift in geographic preference is most observed amongst the highly educated millennials and does not explain for the significant drop in home ownership rates among the less educated millennials. So they're living, and I can tell you what's happening here in our area. The four-year college grads, there's no four-year college grad work in Hunterdon County. We're a $20 an hour economy for the most part. There's very few jobs that are above that, unless you're working for one of the large companies that's out here, and there's less and less of those, or the hospital or the education system. So if you're a four-year college grad, you're probably going to gravitate towards New York City because that's where the jobs are. You want to be within 15 minutes to a half-hour commute, that metropolitan lifestyle from Europe that we've been talking about. And you're going to live in a city like Jersey City or Hoboken. Those are highly dense, expensive places to live. And as a result, we're finding more and more millennials are not amassing the savings they need to buy a house. Much more, they don't want to buy a house. They're very happy living in a high-rise near New York City where there's plenty of nightlife, there's plenty of places to go eat and whatever at night, and they can get back to work in less than a half hour in the morning. We don't offer that in Hunterdon County. We don't offer the jobs, and we don't offer the lifestyle. And while they're doing that, they're out drinking $5 and $6 cups of coffee and eating $14 desserts and not putting money away. One statistic I read said that 89% of all millennials, and once again, millennials are the people between 25 and 34, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong category, 21 and 37. Millennials are between 21 and 37. It said that 89% of all millennials believe in the American dream and believe in home ownership being part of the American dream. So 89% of that largest group of people we've ever had, the largest generation we've ever had, believe in home ownership. Yet, of the 89%, only about 80% of them had more than $5,000 saved. Let me repeat that. 80% of the people who believe in home ownership had less than $5,000 saved because they're living that expensive lifestyle. They're paying a lot for rent. They're paying a lot for their nightlife. And they're enjoying life. They're not necessarily missing the home ownership, but they still really would like to get back to it. Attitudes towards home ownership haven't changed much. Even for married, high-income, white households with children, the home ownership rate is 2 to 3 percentage points lower than it was for similar households in the previous two generations. So what we're saying is, even for the married, high-income, white households with children, the home ownership is 2 to 3 percent points lower. Though this suggests an attitude shift about home ownership, it does not appear to be a significant impact. Unless it's the start of something. That's a Joe Peters interjection. And this shift is a result of millennials' experience in housing collapse during the Great Recession, leaving them wary and of potential risks of home ownership. Their attitude towards home ownership may change if the economy continues to strengthen and home prices continue to rise. Now, I can't tell you, even over the last 10 years, how many couples decided to, instead of buy a house where both salaries were counted, take one of the salaries and buy a house based on that and let the other salary. So they would buy below what they could really afford because they saw so many friends lose their houses and get into deep financial troubles over that time frame. Though there's no ideal household homeownership rate, homeownership is highly beneficial for most families, offering a stable place to live, a hedge against inflation, and a way to build wealth. The average homeowner has household wealth of $231,000 compared to the average renter's $5,200. Let me say that again. Average homeowner's household wealth, that means that's what he's got in the house, $231,000 compared to the average renter's $5,200. And I guess that's what he has in the bank. According to two findings of our study are of great concern. Less educated young adults are falling further behind in home ownership. For millennials, the gap in home ownership rates between college grads and high school graduates has grown significantly compared with previous generations. The difference in home ownership rate between the two groups increased from 3 to 10 percent points between 1990 and 2015. Though college-educated millennials contend with a high student debt and less educated millennials who are falling further behind in homeownership. So what we're saying is, and the number I keep hearing is about $350 a month is the average loan debt, college debt, student debt when you come out of college. Well, what they're saying is the less educated don't have that or have that much of it, and yet they're still falling behind. Left unchecked, current trends will result in even greater wealth disparities among white, black, and Hispanic millennials. Millennials aged 18 to 34 in all race and ethnic groups have experienced a drop in home ownership since 2005. Further, the black home ownership rate has contributed continuously lower and lower to all groups and has dropped further than other groups since 2000. Our research also revealed significant influence of parental home ownership wealth on home ownership, an important factor that accelerates the widening gap. So, once again, our research also revealed that significant influence parental home ownership and wealth has on home ownership as an important factor accelerating and widening this gap. Now, what does that mean? I think what we're saying is, A, we're seeing people not earn as much money and have more debt, but B, we're seeing a lifestyle trend change to where home ownership, although we're saying 89% of them still want it, it's not something they're thinking about right now. They want it, but they want it in the future. So it says addressing these will take concentrated, long-term, multi-pronged effort that goes into most of the economic challenges underlying the home ownership gaps. Well, I'll tell you what I see is a major issue as we look at home ownership, and that is the ability to buy a home. And the ability to buy a home as a first-time home buyer is a diminishing ability. And it's a diminishing ability because we don't have a lot of lower-end homes available, and the ones that are available sell almost immediately when they come on. And as a result of that, people have given up looking. And they shouldn't do that because they are there, and the time of the year that you look means a lot to whether or not you're going to be successful. But one of the reasons we aren't building entry-level housing above the affordable housing limit, I'm talking free market entry-level housing, is that affordable housing is in the way. We've got to get over the numbers that we have to build in affordable housing, and several towns are doing that in Hunterdon County. But at the same time, if you take a look at what we would have considered affordable housing 10 years ago, the whole Beaverbrook area, the newer parts of Beaverbrook, which were all in $200,000 and $300,000 townhouses, we haven't built anything like that in the last 15 years. From 2005 on, building has stopped. That was 13 years ago. And we haven't built any more new $200,000 and $300,000 projects like Beaverbrook was and still is. It probably went up and came back down. There's still very high-end $400,000 houses. What we do seem to be building when we build are big center hall colonials. And I, for one, argue that's not what a millennial is looking for. And to a great extent, it's not what anybody is looking for. Most people are experiencing less children than their parents had. They're experiencing less income than their parents had. And they're experiencing a paradigm shift in lifestyle to want to have more discretionary time and money to the point where buying a great big house is not what's on their mind. So my argument has been, if we don't get entry-level housing started, we're going to see this problem personify. We're going to see us stuck with a whole bunch of houses that we can't sell in the over 700,000 category, and we're going to see a whole bunch of people moving out of the area because they can't afford to live here. And let's just put a number on it. If you earn $50,000, that's a reasonable two-year degree and a couple of years of experience. $50,000 is a two-year degree. $75,000 to $100,000 is probably a four-year degree and a couple of years experience, depending where you work. If you're in New York City, it's a little more. If you're in New Jersey, it's a little less. But you pay back commuting. It's the same money. If you earn $50,000 in Hunterdon or Somerset County, I don't care what county in the state you live in, if you earn $50,000, all you can afford to spend on a month for rent or for a home is $1,250 a month. I'll say it again. $50,000 buys you $1,250 in rent or $1,250 in mortgage. You add the taxes and interest together, and you're not going to find anything for $1,250 in Hunterdon or Somerset County. And if you go out to look at rentals, the best you're going to get is an old one-bedroom condo. Our average one-bedroom rate now is in the $1,300 rate, so you may not even be able to afford that. I will tell you, you can probably buy a condo cheaper than you can rent it today because the rents have soared because of this issue. We have about a 2.5% vacancy rate, but there's not that many out there. So, yeah, there's some, and it's sort of like an Easter egg hunt. You got to be the first one there. You got to put a deposit down. You're going to find out there's multiple offers. You're going to find out even though you made the best offer, somebody else has cash and they beat you. I've been through this 100 times. Do you know my average, and it's not me, I think every realtor would agree with me, my average number of offers to completions is at this point in time? I would say it's between 3 and 5, depending on the area. The further to the east, it's higher to 5. In Hunterdon County, it's more like 3. In other words, we're going to make an offer and lose on 3 houses before we get one to stick to the wall because of the competitiveness, because of the lack of inventory. Now, let's go to the point I made before, and that was that the baby boomers, who typically have not moved up to that last big house, and these would be the people in the 50 to 60 range. Typically, the kids are in school. There's more time. You don't need the space. And mom and dad buy their dream house. It's been going on for years. We did it. We bought a great big 4,000-plus square foot house, and it was just two of us. It was so big we had to call each other on the phone. But people are looking at it today and saying, my God, real estate's not the investment that it once was. Usually I would buy something and the price would go up. But if you buy something in the above 600,000 mark in Hunterdon County, at best your price is going to stay the same. At worst, you could lose money over time. So between that and some increased pressure on taxes, although I argue the tax rules don't affect this level buyer, but the buyer is getting twice their standard deduction, whether they buy a house or not. So, in effect, they don't have to buy a house to get it, which they did in the past. Anyway, people aren't buying that last big house. But people have been sitting in their houses for 10, 12, 15 years are starting to sell them. And when somebody puts a 550 on, somebody that just sold a 450 is going to buy it. And when somebody buys his 450, somebody that just told a 300 is going to buy it. And when somebody moves out of that 200 to 300, that's going to be a millennial finding the house they're looking for. So this logjam will unjam if we continue to see the trend that has started. But I think it's going to take some time, and I think it's going to take into the spring. Right now, we're sitting with half the inventory we had 7 years ago in 2011. One half of the inventory that we had 7 years ago. And if we take a look at just Hunterdon and Somerset County, I think you're going to see, let me see if I can find the numbers, we're sitting at about 10% less than a year ago and 20% less than 2 years ago. We're down in inventory. But what I saw different this year, which is when we get past July 4th and we stop listing houses, didn't happen. It almost accelerated after July 4th. And more listings kept coming on. And as a result of more listings coming on, more sales were happening. And it's happening in reverse order. If we sell a house that is in the 550 market, it's probably somebody's finally finding a house they want to move up to and they're putting their 400 on. And when a person buys that, they're finally putting their 300 or 275 on. So it triggers three or four sales. And what used to happen is it was just in the reverse. Somebody would go out and buy that first-time house. That person would buy a second. That person would turn around and buy a third, which would be in a 500. But there's such a shortage of inventory, people are afraid to put their house on the market and be caught in between. So they're not putting their house on the market, and that's what's slowing things down. So it's not like they've changed their mind or they're buying that last big house. That still isn't happening. To a great extent, it still isn't happening. What is happening is people who haven't sold their house in a long time, and up before the financial crisis, the average time in a house was somewhere between 7 and 8 years before you sell it. That's average. Some people stay in a house for life. Some people stay in a house less than 7 or 8 years. But the average was 7 or 8 years. Right now, it's around 11 or 12. But that log jam is starting to free up, and we're starting to see people who put their house on the market. And as a result of that, we are seeing the market continue. And last month in Hunterdon County, for example, let me just take a quick look at the numbers. We sold 156 houses. We sold 204 the month before. So the month of July slowed down about 25% over the month of June. But I wouldn't be surprised if we sell more than that in the month of August. It just kept going. And when we sold 156, we listed 230. And if you divide the 156 and the 945, which is our total, we have 6 months of inventory. And we have 6 months of inventory or less all the way up to we get to the 700,000 mark. That's pretty good news. So what am I saying? In a nutshell, I think the logjam is freeing up. But in a nutshell, we have sort of a tale of two cities. We have millennials moving towards New York, where they can earn the money and where they can live the cosmopolitan lifestyle that they want and spend their money on that lifestyle and not save towards home ownership. And then we have people in Hunterdon County who have been looking to buy for a long time are finally able to buy because we're starting to see houses come on the market all over the place because people have put a lot into their home and to the equity. Once you get past 10 years, you're paying a lot towards equity. And they're realizing it, they're selling it, and three of the four people I'm talking to are saying, adios, New Jersey, it's too expensive to live here. So let's talk about first-time buyer mistakes and how to avoid them. The very first thing people don't do when they go out as a millennial is figure out how much they can afford. They want to just, nobody wants to address it scientifically. They want to go look at houses. Without knowing how much you can afford, it's a waste of time to a great extent. You could be looking for houses that you can't afford or visiting homes that are below your optimal price level. For many first-time buyers, the goal is to buy a house and get a loan with a comfortable monthly payment that won't keep you up at night, and sometimes it's a good idea to aim low. How do you avoid this mistake? You go out and you talk to a mortgage professional up front, and you get a calculation that shows you what price point is affordable for you, and now you go out and address it a little more comfortably. And I tell this to a lot of people. When I get a buyer who wants to look at houses, I say, why don't we sit down and talk first? Well, I'd like to look at some houses. So I talk to them along the way, and I do the pitch as we go through the first two house visiting trips. But then I say, you know what? Based on your taste, I think you're looking for a house that's probably higher than the level you're looking at. And I wouldn't be surprised if you can't afford that, but you should talk to a mortgage person and find out. So they may be looking at the 350 when they could afford up to 500. Now, that may require both salaries, but I get them to talk to a mortgage professional, and it's amazing sometimes what we discover. So figuring out how much you can afford is a great first step. Also, people tend to make a down payment that's too small. If you put 20% down, and that's a lot of money, even if you're buying a $100,000 house, and there's no such thing in Hunterdon County or Somerset County. There's probably no such thing as a $200,000 house. But you get above that, and we start to have inventory. So you buy a $100,000 house, and you put 20% down. That means you have to have $20,000 in cash. You're not saving $20,000 in cash if you're eating $4 desserts, $14 desserts, and drinking $5 cups of coffee. So we need people to understand that you don't need to have 20% down. Some loan programs can get you in with 3.5, and sometimes that's a good idea. But homeownership occasionally have... Sometimes that's a good idea, but homeowners occasionally have regrets. It's a survey commissioned by NerdWallet who wrote this article. 1 in 9, or 11% of homeowners under 35, agreed with a statement, "I should have waited until I had a bigger down payment." It was one of the most common regrets that millennial homeowners made. And how do you avoid this mistake? Figuring out how much it is could be a judgment call, but a bigger down payment allows you to get a smaller mortgage, giving you more affordable house payments. And I see a lot of people still living with mom and dad so they can put some money away. That's sort of one way to get there. The downside of taking the time and saving money is that mortgage rates have been rising. So it means that it's going to become more difficult to buy the home that you want. You may miss out on the building home equity as those values increase. So you got a two-pronged thing going on. Interest rates are going up. For every 1% they go up, for instance, this year they'll go from 4 to 5%. You're going to lose about 9% of your buying power. So if you could afford a $500,000 house, just to use round numbers, at the end of the year, you can only afford a $455,000 house. At the same time, prices are going up. We're probably going to see 5 to 7%, depending on your price point and location. So let's just use the bottom and say 5% went up. The house went up 5%. So you lost 9% in buying power, and the price of the house increased 5%. So now, I guess, instead of getting a 455, you're probably going to get a 4.25 or a 430. So waiting a year cost you probably 20%. At least 15% in the house that you want to buy. And another thing is emptying your savings. If you buy a previously owned home, it's mostly inevitably you're going to need unexpected repairs not long after you move in. Maybe you'll need to replace the water heater, pay for a homeowner's insurance deductible after bad weather. I don't know what that means. Maybe you'll need to replace the hot water heater. That's the least of your problems. You need to replace a furnace or an air conditioner or windows or doors. That's where the money is at. It's a growing pain for first-time homeowners when stuff breaks. They find themselves in a hole quickly, and they don't have enough saved for emergencies. So they put it on a credit card. Somehow it doesn't get paid off, and now they're paying a lot of interest. How to avoid this mistake? Save enough money to make a down payment for the closing costs and the moving expenses and take care of repairs that may come up. Lenders will give you some estimates for this. There's some loan programs that would help you out there. The VA, if you came out of service, USDA, which is pretty widely used. There's some zero down, FHAs. All of these are higher risk loans. They're all form of FHA loans, which means it's not, you're not borrowing from the bank, you're borrowing from a government under a bank program. And VA loans are mortgages guaranteed by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for people who have served in the military. USDA loans can be used to buy homes that are designated rural, but we're rural, so don't worry about it. A lot of USDA loans, you could get 100% financing on a USDA loan. And on an FHA loan, you could get in with 3.5% down. On a conventional loan, you can get in with 3% down, even less. But the thing that happens if you get in with that low of a down payment is you're going to have to pay private mortgage insurance, or PMI. So what does that mean? That means you're going to guarantee, because you haven't put enough money down for the bank to feel comfortable, you're going to pay a premium insurance to guarantee that if you default, the bank gets paid. So let me say it, show you how it works. If you put 20% down on a $500,000 house, you'd put $50,000 down, I should say. No, $100,000 down. My multiplier's not working well. If you put $100,000 down, you'd still finance $400,000. But if you went out and only put 3% down, you'd put $15,000 down, and you'd finance $485,000. Not only would you be financing $85,000 more, which you'd pay every month in interest, but you'd also have about 0.75 point in PMI. So it's an expensive way. I mean, our rule of thumb is you need at least 3% for closing costs, and you need at least 3% for a down payment. And then you're going to start paying 0.75 point till your house's appreciation gets up to where you have 20% equity. Some banks are a little lower than that, but in general, it's a 20% equity situation. So you've got some things available to you, including loan types, and then you've got different kinds of mortgages. Besides that, shopping for a mortgage is like shopping for a car or any other expensive item. It pays to compare offers. Mortgage interest rates vary from lender to lender, and so does some of the closing costs. But according to Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, almost half of the borrowers don't shop for a loan. What I always tell my people is, let's get in, let's get the offer made with a bank that you're comfortable with, and then let's go shop it around. Let's see if there's a better deal out there for you. I find that nobody can loan you money cheaper than anybody else. If the rate is better, it's buried in points. If there's less points, it's not that good of a rate. It comes out to about the same thing. It's somewhere. It's in there. You know, it's like Prego. It's in there, but you got to figure out where. Apply for multiple mortgage lenders. Research from Freddie Mac indicates that borrowers could save an average of $1,500 for the life of the loan by getting one or more rate quote. An average of $3,000, they get 5 rate quotes. So they are saying there's some better deals out there. Credit reports. So what do you need to buy a house and get a credit? In order to get a mortgage, you have to have a job. Pushing carriages at Walmart isn't going to cut it. It's a reputable job, but it's not enough to get a mortgage. So you have to have a job. You have to be in that job. And there has to be demand that you're earning what you're earning in that job. So let me say that backwards. If you're pushing carriages, you're probably making minimum wage or maybe a few dollars more. But if you got a two-year college degree, you're probably making like $20 an hour instead of roughly $10 an hour. And if you got a four-year degree, you're probably making more like $40 an hour. Well, you always get paid in replacement cost. So if 10 people could push a carriage, you could be replaced by somebody who's willing to work for minimum wage. But if you're a computer programmer, you can only get replaced by another computer programmer, and he's going to get as much, if not more, than you're getting. So you're going to get paid replacement value. You need a job, then you need some credit. Your credit, and we're going to talk about this, has to be decent. You have to clear at least 650 on your FICO scores, and if you clear 750, you're probably golden. So I would think one of the first things you want to do is pull your own credit report and just take a look at it. But if you're going to go apply for a mortgage, your mortgage rep's going to do that with you. So you might want to do both at the same time. And if you say, oh, it gets pulled too many times, now they can do a soft pull. And it's not going to affect your credit. If it is, it's going to affect it a point and it goes away in a month. You need a job, you need a decent credit report, and you need some money to get started with. If you got those three things, you should be in fairly good shape to get a mortgage. Now, if you put 3% down, you're going to pay PMI. If you put 20% down or roughly that amount, you're not. So there's some various things. I know I heard one couple tell me, well, I'm not going to put the extra 17% down. I'm going to leave it in the bank, and that 17% will earn me 3% in the bank or stock market. And I'll pay the extra 0.75% because I think it's cheaper than what I'd be making, or roughly the same, and I know I've got a cash reserve. That's one way of looking at it. Other people just don't want to pay interest. Then there's discount points. To me, that's part of the shell game. If you're getting a discount point, that means it's coming from somewhere else. Your rate's going to be higher. If you're not getting it, it's going to be lower. And shopping for a house before a mortgage. It's more fun to look at homes than it is to talk about finances. That's pretty natural. So that's what a lot of first-time buyers do. They visit properties before finding out how much they're able to borrow. Then they're disappointed to discover they were looking at the wrong price range. Especially with first-time buyers, I pretty much, after the first time out, say, we've got to go talk to a mortgage rep and get a picture on it. Underestimating the cost of home ownership. It's just like owning a car. It's not just your down payment and your mortgage payment. Your taxes are included in your mortgage payment. Your homeowner's included in your mortgage payment. If you're in a community living, your homeowner's association is aside from your mortgage payment. But there's other things that come along. You probably need to put a couple of percent a year away. Some years you won't use it, and some years you use much more than it, so that's why it averages out. But let's say your furnace and air conditioner need to be replaced. I live in a townhouse. Furnace and air conditioner cost me $11,500. So if I was to put 2% of our mortgage payment, which is roughly $3,000, away, that would be about $60 a month, $600, $720 a year. It would take me a lot of years to be able to afford that, but that's an extraordinary investment in a house because your air conditioner and furnace only go every 25 to 30 years. But you might need to put a new roof on, or you might need to put new storm windows in, or you might need to replace the refrigerator, or the washer dryer kaput on you. So home ownership has a lot of parts, and you've got to make sure you understand it, and you've got to make sure that the mortgage person you're working with shows you how to set up a reserve for that, so you're not only allowing or allocating enough money for the mortgage payment, but you're putting away a kitty towards repairs. And if you ever get into a homeowners association, you'll see that many, many homeowners associations, if not all, have a reserve because they know eventually they're going to have to re-roof the place. And if they don't put enough of their homeowners' dues into a reserve, eventually they're going to have to reassess the homeowners in order to put the roof on. And I think there's now some government regulations as to how much reserve you've got to keep in relationship to the costs that are going on. So it's not just the cost of buying the house. It's the cost of maintaining the house. It's the cost of heating and painting. Just painting alone is not cheap. Go price a gallon of paint anymore. Go price a painter. You want to paint the inside of a 3,000-square-foot house, you're talking about $8,000 to $10,000 if you use a professional painter, and that includes all the gallons of paint. It's not cheap. You want to paint the outside? It's probably more like $15,000 if you use a professional painter. That's why most people think, well, the time I paint it 2.5 times, I could put vinyl up and I'll never have to worry about it again. And they do that and they pay it off over 10 years. And that's a great decision because vinyl with insulation behind it gives you a much airtighter house. You probably want to replace the windows over periods of time. And then renovations. I mean, I see a lot of people saying, what if I buy a fixer-upper? This is an argument that's pretty easy to argue. And I said, okay, I just showed a couple lists last week. They're looking at a house that easily needed $100,000 in fixing up. Needed new windows, it needed new roof, it needed vinyl siding, it needed the floors redone, did have a good furnace and air conditioner, did have a decent kitchen and bathroom, but it also needed some work outside, landscaping and such. It was a pretty run-down house. So I said, well, you could buy this for $300 and put $100 into it, or you could buy another one for $400 and just live in it. Depends what you want, a project or a house. And I know I liked projects. I had to have something to do on a weekend. It was sort of fun to fix up a house to me. The key word there was. I've gone age-wise beyond the point where I consider that fun anymore. What I want to do on a weekend is watch the Giants, go blue fishing, or maybe just relax and not be fixing the gutters, pulling the weeds, and painting the room. So there's a lot to be considered. And we started off talking about millennials. But regardless of who buys the house, there's a lot to be considered. It's just like buying a car. It's not just the cost of the car. It's the cost of operating the car, how much gasoline, how much oil, how much maintenance, tires. What is your kitty? I remember saying to one of my kids, he wanted to buy the car. He had enough money for the car. So what about the insurance? Oh, I didn't think about that. Well, that's like $1,000 a year for a kid. So, okay, now I got the money for the car and the insurance. Well, what about a repair kitty, just in case? There's nothing worse than owning a car fully insured and sitting in front of the house broke because you don't have money to fix it. Houses are the same way. It's not that you're going to sit in front of the car broke, but in effect, you want to live in it and you want to use it. And I said there's a pretty easy argument when somebody wants to buy a fixer-upper. We have people out there every day. We call them flippers. They're cash buyers. They buy and sell. They try to make $30,000, $40,000 in the middle. They'll buy a house. They'll keep it less than 6 months. They'll toss it back on the market. In the between, they will have fixed the house up to a great extent, and they might buy a house for $300,000 and put $60,000 into it and sell it for $400,000. And that's not a bad profit. $40,000 in 6 months on an investment that, even if it was cash, was $300,000, it's better than 10%. Those people are out every day. And if a house was that valuable, it wouldn't be on the market more than the first day because they're looking at them as soon as they come on. So when people think, oh, I'm going to buy it and fix it up, yeah, if you're only going to put a lot of sweat equity into it, it may not be a bad idea, but you know what? After two or three weekends, that gets tired. You want to do some things with the kids. You want to do some things with the wife. And you want to do some things just for you. Owning a home ownership shouldn't be the home owning you. And I know I was there. When we had that large 4,000 square foot house, it owned us. I mean, it wasn't a weekend. We didn't have a project on the house. It was almost come feed me, like the Jedi in the corner. It was a beautiful house. We enjoyed it. It was an opulent house. It was bigger than what we needed. But it took a lot of resources in the form of time and money. And now that we're out of it and living into more of a community development in the townhouse, we have a lot more time and money because I don't have to maintain the house. That's why people gravitate towards community living. Everything outside's done for you, including the snow shoveling. And I don't have to put the time in it, I don't have to put the money in it, and I now have time and money to do other things like enjoy my life and go on vacation. May not have that great big house that everybody's envious of, but I also got pictures that I'll never forget from a vacation that we had a wonderful time taking. Anyway, this is Joe Peters. I work for Coldwell Banker. I've been with residential real estate in the area for some 15 years. I cover all of Hunterdon and Somerset County. If you're thinking about buying, we should be talking months ahead of putting your house on the market so that you have an understanding of what you're up against and you can get your house prepared for it and conditioned. If you're thinking about buying, you're probably having a tough time and you may need an agent that knows the ins and outs on how to find a house. I had three people find a house for me in the last 30 days. And all of us were surprised because in the prior 90, they probably wouldn't have found it because it did slow down a little on the buyer competition. So I can be reached at 908-238-0118, 908-238-0118, or go online, jpeters.com. That's my website. And there's a bunch of information out there. All of the articles, all of these broadcasts or podcasts are out there. I have articles about first-time buyers. I have articles about 55-plus. I have articles about trading up, trading down, right-sizing, and what the trends are, and my two newsletters. I do one for Hunterdon and one for Somerset County, are all out on my website. You'll find a ton of information. I think you'll find it worth your while. And while you're there, sign up for my newsletter, and each month you will get a copy of one of the greatest, most informative newsletters. I actually have 2,200 people reading this at the current point, some in Hunterdon, some in Somerset. And it not only tells you what's happening, it's about 7 pages long, it tells you why it's happening. For instance, what's happening is we're selling less houses over 700,000. Why it's happening, you got to read the newsletter, but it's in there. And I think it's going to make you a smarter consumer and ready you better for home selling or home buying. And I've appreciated spending this time with you. Joe Peters signing out. I will be back next week with a fella to talk about getting seniors out of their house and into a senior environment and how he managed that process for them. Thank you for tuning in.
USA Radio News.
President Trump's campaign organization today filed arbitration against friend-turned-enemy Omarosa Manigault, claiming that she broke a 2016 non-disclosure agreement by disparaging the president in her new book. John Yoo is a former Department of Justice official. He believes there's one thing that Omarosa should be really concerned about.
She's in big trouble, really the biggest trouble she could possibly be in, is for bringing a recording device into the White House Situation Room, which is supposed to be the most protected area in the United States. If you were the Chinese Secret Service, this is a dream come true, and it's a criminal penalty to bring a device like that and record someone inside what's supposed to be a secured room to protect classified information.
And the attorneys for Paul Manafort rested their case today without presenting any evidence or witnesses. Manafort is on trial for tax and bank fraud. You're listening to USA Radio News.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off that extra long lunch hat. Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
In need of comfort? Look to two American icons, the Company Store and the LaCrosse Comforter. Available in down and down-free options in 4 warmth levels and 14 colors. For over 100 years, no one gives you more choices and better quality than the Company Store. Go to thecompanystore.com and enter code RADIO15 to receive 15% off your entire order and free shipping. That's thecompanystore.com. The Company Store. Comfort that fits your style.
The man best known as Stormy Daniels' lawyer is considering a run for the White House in 2020, and he's released a document already concerning how he stands on the issues. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
Having recently visited early voting Iowa to test the waters, Michael Avenatti says in a new policy document that he supports a basic Medicare plan for all Americans with an option to purchase additional coverage. He backs a path to citizenship for young immigrants brought here as children, known as Dreamers. He also wants to see a national paid family leave program, and he says marijuana should be decriminalized at the federal level. So-called assault weapons should be banned, and the United States should rejoin the